am, you know, I called back and spoke to the individual and said, you know, next time, you know, let's save it. Let's use one of those mini Ziploc bags you have, put the date on it and send it home with the individual along with some information about what could happen and what signs to look for, what symptoms to look for should anything have happened. You know, now luckily the tick hadn't fed very long at all on my child. But it is something that does happen, and it's something that we need to acknowledge.
Yeah, that's such a good example. And I agree. I think it would be really wonderful to develop, you know, a template for those policies so that people can adapt them for their own schools or outdoor education programs, camps. I know sometimes they have policies in place too. Yeah,
absolutely. Really, yes. My child's always at some kind of outdoor camp during the summer or fall break. And yes, and so I always talk with the staff there, you know, what's your tick prevention policy because of who I am?
Right.
But, you know, sharing those with others would be pretty smart to do.
Yeah. Now, is there any emerging research that you're excited about?
Yeah, so we actually have kind of, I don't want to say changed gears, but changed a little bit of focus in the tick world. I guess in Tennessee, primarily because of the Asian longhorn tick, Haemaphysalis longicornis. Are you all familiar with this tick at all?
I am not, no, but...
That's good. You don't want to become familiar with it. This is a tick whose biology and ecology is very similar to the Lone Star tick. It's very abundant in numbers. It, you know, kind of comes out at the same time period. So for us, it's, you know, from spring break to fall break, it's out in the fields. But what's really emerging problem with this tick is its idea that it can go from egg to adult in 1 year. So most of the time our ticks take 2 to 3 years to go from egg to an adult. But this tick, the Asian longhorn tick, can do it in 1 year. And we have collected over 15,000 of these ticks in Tennessee, and we've yet to find a male. This tick is actually parthenogenic. It doesn't need a male to mate and have offspring. And so it's a huge concern for us in the state of Tennessee because it's feeding on cattle and can potentially, you know, transmit different pathogens to cattle. And in areas where this tick is indigenous, so in Southeast Asia, it has the ability to transmit a number of different nasty pathogens to humans as well. We've been very fortunate in the United States that it hasn't been transmitting, at least to our knowledge, any pathogens to humans. But you know, we're constantly looking at this tick, talking about this tick, and developing these prevention, detection responses for this tick species as well. So this is our kind of new tick on the block. Is a way to think about it.
I find I was reading your paper, which we'll post in the show notes as well, but I noticed that and it said no males found. I was like, what's that mean? So that is the new take on the block.
You know, when I talk to my producers, I'm in the state of Tennessee, so my cow-calf producers, you know, I tell them that it's kind of like an aphid. So if we ignore it, the tick numbers will get out of control very quickly. So aphids, you know, are kind of the same thing. They just grow in numbers so quickly that you can quickly become overwhelmed. But we've been really lucky to have some producers who've been working with us and identifying some of these, you know, tick management, strategies that we use for Lone Star ticks, that we use for black-legged ticks, are also working for this Asian longhorn tick. And so very excited that some of the things we're already doing is potentially working.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Becky, for your time. I can tell that your classroom is a really fun and engaging place to learn, and I really appreciate you taking the time to teach us today. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. And anytime you want to talk ticks, I'm here.
Okay. We are 2 years into this podcast and we are still learning lots of new things. Today, I learned about the Heller's organ at the end of the tick's leg, as well as about the new tick on the block, the Asian longhorn tick. So let's keep learning, everyone, and let's remember, stay safe in the outdoors.
She needs to learn how to pay attention.
She's not reaching her potential.
Hi, I'm Jennifer, and in grade 10, I was diagnosed with ADHD. At the time, this diagnosis made the idea of pursuing post-secondary education seem like an impossible goal for me. However, every year became an opportunity to learn how to better manage my disability, and I ended up going to university. Through my journey, I've learned that your disability does not define who you are or your ability to succeed.
The LIME Network is a nonprofit organization, an exclusive resource for university students, professionals, and veterans who happen to have any type of disability. We develop communities and provide members with some of the tools and self-confidence they need to reach their full potential. To join, visit www.limeconnect.com.
And let's take a quick look at the Vancouver weather for this week. You are listening to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Magnus Tiewald. And the weather this week is looking pretty nice. It's calling for sun all week. And it's sort of modest temperatures for the first part of the week. Today it's going to be sunny with a mix of sun and cloud, highs up to 16. But each day it's going to get a little warmer. Same mix and cloud tomorrow, then straight sunny starting on Wednesday. And by the time we get to the weekend, we're getting up to some temperatures of 24 and 25 degrees for Saturday and Sunday. So great beach weather. There are some warnings about it getting really hot, up to 30. That's not what the Environment Canada forecast is looking at right now, the 7-day forecast. But it does look like it's going to be a great weekend on this coming weekend. So generally a nice week, and you can break your shorts out and your T-shirts and your light jackets. All right, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Now we're going to bring you our interview about the net with Stanis Smith, Vancouver architect and airport designer, and some of his issues with the proposed new flight routes that for Vancouver that will bring a whole bunch of new flights over North Burnaby. Joining me today is Stanis Smith, who's a Burnaby resident. Who is not happy with the new flight routes proposed by NAV Canada, the national agency that manages Canadian airspace. The new routes will bring more planes over North Burnaby neighborhoods. Thanks for joining me today, Stanis.
My pleasure.
You have started a petition that calls for NAV Canada to reconsider these changes. What are some of your concerns?
Well, I have a number of concerns. For people who are not aware of this proposal, it was announced late last year that NAV Canada is going to be consolidating all of the air traffic in the Greater Vancouver region. And what that means is that they're taking the air traffic, which right now is quite dispersed, and they're channeling it into what I would call freeways in the air. And they have said on their in their public announcements that these changes are being made in the name of enhancement of safety, modernizing procedures, and demand. And those may well be the case. However, there is very significant impact to a number of residential areas. And I would add to SFU, because one of the main freeways will go pretty well directly over SFU at a very low altitude.
Yeah, I've seen that route. It comes right over the campus.
Exactly. And my concerns are several. The first is that in the information that NAV Canada has made public, they're using outdated standards for noise contours. And without getting too much into the technical details, they are using noise thresholds that have been superseded many years ago by the World Health Organization and a number of other entities. So in simple terms, the noise levels that they consider to be acceptable are double or more than double what the World Health Organization and others recommend. NAV Canada has also not proposed any mitigation measures, or certainly they haven't disclosed any that they've made public or spoken about alternatives such as different routes, such as moving capacity to Abbotsford rather than YVR, such as curfews at night, which many cities have. So there's no consideration of ways in which these new routes would potentially cause less impact. And my final major reservation is that there's a lack of due process and transparency. The way these have been put out to the public is that these are the routes that NAV Canada has decided upon, and we are invited to comment on them. However, there's been no due process about how they even came up with them in the first place.
Right. So you're talking about a lot of technical aspects of this, but you're not just a resident of Burnaby who might be affected by this. You do have some expertise in this area. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, yes, I've been involved in airport design for most of my professional career. I'm currently working on projects in the States, and so I bring that perspective. And there is a certain irony to me taking this position. And obviously, I have a vested interest. I'm in one of the areas that will be affected. But I think increasingly people are realizing that noise pollution is a major consideration. It's a major health consideration. And to the extent that these routes are going to impact real people on the ground who live in residential areas, I think that the potential impacts are very serious, not to mention, of course, the potential economic impacts to people who are now going to be living in areas that will probably see some depreciated value as a result of being in a flight path.
Right. So you mentioned a bit about sort of the process, and as you describe it, NAV Canada sort of makes the decision, and then there's an invitation for some comments. But what's the process after that? I mean, what do the comments mean?
Well, it's a great question. And obviously, to the extent that NAV Canada is going to take those comments into consideration, I think you would need to ask them. However, NAV Canada is an independent entity. It's not answerable directly to the public. It's only answerable to Transport Canada. Transport Canada sets the regulatory authority. And so our petition is a very simple and I think very reasonable request for an independent environmental assessment of these potential routes. And if this project was anything other than a airspace, if it was, let us say, a new freeway going through a residential area, or if it was a new major infrastructure project, it would automatically trigger an environmental assessment before the new routes were actually designed. So I think that our request, which is it's a Government of Canada petition, where we already have the prerequisite number of signatures on it. It's a request to Transport Canada to exercise their authority and undertake an independent environmental assessment with emphasis on the independence, because all of the materials that NAV Canada has produced so far have been internally generated or generated by consultants hired by NAV Canada.
So what is the threshold for the petition, and how many have you got so far?
The threshold's 500. We have we're getting close to 900.
Yes.
So, and we'd love to get more, because obviously the more people that see this as being a concern, the more likely it is that Transport Canada will pay attention. And I think that certainly from the point of view of SFU, anybody taking a look at those maps has every reason for serious concern. Mm-hmm. The aircraft will be lower than 5,000 feet as they go over SFU. And I'm not sure what altitude SFU is at. It's at several hundred feet at any rate. So
yeah, like 1,300 feet.
Right. So this is going to be a very significant noise issue directly over SFU, not just, of course, for the tuition spaces, but for people who are living on the hill.
Mm-hmm. So what do you say to people who say, well, the planes have to fly somewhere? Why not over North Burnaby?
What I say is, firstly, the same, you know, let's think about Vancouver in the 1950s, when people proposed to take all of the dispersed traffic and put it into freeways. And citizens of Vancouver said, no, we're not interested in that. And I think as a result, Vancouver is a more livable city. Well, I think we'd all agree that when you look at other cities who chose the freeway route. And this is a direct analogy. I mean, what we're talking about here are freeways in the sky. NAV Canada in their materials have said that 61,000 homes will be, or 61 fewer homes will be impacted. And I would say that at the minimum, that is highly misleading, because the criteria they're using are outdated criteria. I think if they were to use current thresholds of noise that are accepted by respected entities such as the World Health Organization, they would find that that the impacts are very significant. So that's what I would say to people. The other thing I would say is that many cities our size have more than one airport. You can think of many airports, many cities that have two airports. And there is another perfectly viable airport out there in Abbotsford. And the irony of this whole situation is that the residents of Tri-Cities, Burnaby, New West are going to be paying the price for enhancements to YVR when, in fact, their closest airport is Abbotsford.
Right.
So there really is an irony there from my perspective.
So if I understand what you're saying, I mean, these changes aren't just moving the routes, but they're concentrating. So the areas that are affected will be seeing perhaps more flights than any particular area under PATHS now. Is that correct?
Exactly.
All right. So is there any established appeal process for these kind of changes other than what you're doing right now with the petition?
The only appeal process that I am aware of is to appeal directly to NAV Canada, which I and a number of people have done, and to appeal to Transport Canada to exercise its authority to undertake an independent environmental assessment. And Transport Canada has that authority.
All right. And have you heard of any other communities being successful in this kind of appeal?
Well, this is the first time that the airspace in Canada is being materially changed in many decades.
Right.
So this is an unprecedented situation.
Interesting. Well, how do people find out more about your petition and the issue, and where can they go and join the petition if they're interested?
I'd encourage everybody to take a look at the website that we've launched. It's nooverflights.com. That's nooverflights.com. And on that website, you'll see a lot of materials and obviously the link to the petition. And we really would encourage people, if they are concerned, to sign the petition and help us to hopefully move this in a direction that's going to be better for all concerned.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Stanis. Stanis R. Smith is a Burnaby resident and architect who's worked on airport design around the world or around North America. Thank you for joining me today.
Okay. Thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
Bye now.
This is Bird Note. In this show, we use a bamboo bird whistle to demonstrate variations in the song of a single song sparrow. Heidi Holting, a musician, listens carefully to the songs of birds.
One morning, I was in dreamland and I heard this very loud rhythm coming through my window, and it woke me up. Well, I decided I was going to try to write down the rhythm. So it went. What was really noticeable was that it had three parts to the song. The first part, and then kind of a buzzing, and then five regular notes. Okay, so then one day I noticed that the song was different, and it went, you know, day after day, I just kept, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. And I kept writing them down.
In all, Heidi documented 13 variations.
What's happened in this later stage of life, with the kids gone and the pets gone, is that I'm beginning to perceive the complexity of all the life forms that have been around me all along, that I thought of, oh, as those are birds. And now they're not just birds, they're 100 kinds of birds with 100 songs.
For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Treated me right. How could put up a fight. Yes, you changed, but it don't seem like you're ready to face it. But you can have it back, no, it ain't the same. No, we came so close to a pretty ending. Now I swear it feels like I am tightening my grip on you. I held on tight to us for what it used to be. Once how you looked at me, you drew a part of me then, which is why now I'm hurting so badly. Hate the fact that I'm lonelier by your side. Being with you should feel like I'm on cloud nine. So how come you just cloud my mind? You just cloud my mind. You just cloud my mind.
Mayfly and Pretty Ending from the album Hideaway Volume 2. Just about out of time here at Speak Up for this Monday. Coming up at noon, or rather coming up at the top of the hour, is Democracy Now!, which we bring to you every Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. Coming up at noon, Nick Legacy and Wandering Rhythms, Alex Morris and Generic Alternative at 2 p.m., and Leslie and Jade with Typically Tuesday at 3 p.m. All that coming up on CJSF, and a lot more great programming through the evening.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. A new video game called High Water immerses players in a dystopian world ravaged by climate change-induced floods, war, and chaos. Igor Simic is CEO and creative director of Demagogue Studios, which created Highwater. In the game, players help a teenager named Nico sneak onto a rocket ship the rich have built to flee to Mars.
Since wars are raging, people are dying of dysentery, etc., he wants to move to a better life.
To get there, Nikos must navigate the landscape by boat, collect his friends, and fight adversaries. Along the way, players face moral questions.
So, for example, you might decide not to help someone because there isn't enough space in your boat, or you might decide to help them.
The game is satirical at times. Simic says it's meant for entertainment, not to preach about climate change. But the creators were influenced by natural disasters, such as Hurricane Katrina and flooding in Serbia.
That triggered something, just the images of boats going around water that is up to the first floor or second floor.
So while the game depicts a fictional world, it reflects real fears people have about climate disasters. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
All right, quick reminder about the weather this week. It's going to be very fine all week. You can count on that. But a mix of sun and cloud today and tomorrow, moving into consistently sunny weather through to the end of the week. We do have some warnings about extreme heat up to 30 degrees, which is not entirely extreme, but certainly not entirely normal for this time of year, this early in May. But the actual forecast for the moment, at least through till Sunday, calls for highs up to 25, which really isn't too bad. Here's some music from Chris Butterfield. Piece you're listening to is by Chris Butterfield. It's a piece called Souvenir from 1995, and it's from an album of the same name, which is currently on our playlist. It's actually we're only going to be listening to a segment of it. The full track is 21 minutes long. We're in total going to hear up to about 5 minutes. This is the end of our program. Please stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up in just a few minutes. No, a few seconds. And lots more great programming up here on CJSF today.